Let me begin with the most central point. Mujahideen, Muralis, tell me about. Full stop. Colon. My alleged feelings as an outsider in a world to which I came as a stranger, etc. And its relevance to my view of the Jews as hunchbacks, etc. Full stop. This really is not the case. Full stop. The thing about me, the thought of which occasionally embarrasses me, is that I adjust myself too rapidly and easily to almost any group of persons I am thrown together with. Full stop. I have no recollection of what happened when I was in Russia, of course. But let me tell you, thrown into a group of English schoolboys in Surbiton, were as remote from me as anyone could be. I felt no sense of alienness. Yes, I fitted in very quickly, became quite popular, and felt totally at home among them all. I played cricket and football quite easily and naturally, and accepted all their values, dash, swallowed them whole, uncritically. Full stop. So too, later, colon. The only moment at which something unlike this happened was when, can break it, as I think I told you, and to break it, having been accepted by Westminster, comma, when my Latin coach told me that the name Isaiah might cause boys to tease me and mock me, and would it not be better if I changed it to something ordinary English, like John or Robert or Henry? Dash, I then thought, no, I don't wish to go to a school where this is liable to happen. That was the only moment of, as it were, a foreigner's self-conscious resistance ever occurred in my life, I think. And so, boldly, I chose St. Paul's, where there were plenty of Jews, some from abroad. No, some whose parents came from abroad. Full stop. I was totally happy in St. Paul's and fitted in from the beginning. I had only two Jewish friends. All the others were English Gentiles. Dash. The English Gentiles were a great deal closer to me than the two Jews. Dash. One of them was only half Jewish and was killed as a pilot in the Battle of Britain. The other, called Ettinghausen, then became a Zionist, became called Eitan, E-Y-T-A-N, and became a high Israeli official, ambassador in Paris, etc. Dash. I still know him, of course. He's my age. But our relationship has become very, very remote. Full stop. My friends and both were naturally English. Full stop. I never felt alien, come so far as I can recollect, of course, dash, for 1 second. Full stop. After that, Oxford. Corpus Christi College, it's scarcely any Jews, and no foreigners. Mainly boys from the middle public schools, from Winchester downwards. No Eat nor Harrow. From the first week, after some feeling of strangeness, but immense relief at being free at last, and not in my parents' home, I made almost too many friends, almost too easily. And there is no doubt that during my entire period there, I felt totally at ease, completely natural. And nobody ever tried to embarrass me or talk to me about my strange origins or non-Christian religion, ever. Full stop. Odd, but true. Full stop. Then, there were Jews in Oxford then, to the number of, I think, 70 or 80, and I was, of course, always a Zionist from the beginning. But my Zionism entirely consisted in the general idea of getting a Jewish state going, and had no relation to any particular Jews or my relations with them. Again, this may sound odd, but it is true. There was a Zionist society in Oxford to which I regularly, once a year, addressed myself with Zionist propaganda. I met these people and was perfectly amiable to them and they to me, but we did not belong to the same society. I did not make real friends with them. There was indeed a Jew called Beddington at Corpus, of a fairly old British Jewish family, originally called Moses. He did come and see me very late at night and told me how awkward he felt about being a Jew, how he hated it, and how he hoped that nobody was taking him for one. Full stop. In fact, nobody did. Incidentally, there's a funny story. There was perhaps a not very nice schoolmaster at Rugby, where Roy Beddington, Brackett, still alive, a painter in a Brackett, was, who used to say to the boys, and the Lord said unto Moses, good morning, Mr. Beddington. Mr. Beddington. Full stop. End of quotes. I was very sorry for Roy B, but felt that this could never happen to me. Anyway, I made friends in other colleges, none from my old school, except the two I mentioned. I presume that everybody well knew I was a Jew. Dash, I have been one 100% from the very beginning, as indeed any child of my parents couldn't help But B, dash, I didn't go to chapel. Still, dash, nobody ever brought it up in any connection. However, polite and friendly. And yet I had very good and genuinely intimate friends at Corpus at this time. When I moved into Diggs, it was with three Malburians, one from Corpus, two from Elthra, with one of whom, Bernard Spencer, quite a good poet, yes, I remained on intimate terms for the rest of my, for the rest of his life. Break it. He fell out of a train from Vienna while working for the British Council. Nobody knows how, whether voluntarily or by accident. Full stop. The only Jew in Oxford I really knew was Herbert Hart, who was a very marginal one. And although we talked about how boring he found his minister's sermons in Bradford, we never talked about Judaism much. And great many people, including the last warden of New College and the last master of UNIF, of both of which he'd been a fellow, had any idea that he was a Jew. I discovered that when I went to his funeral. Yes, he did not hide it, but he was super English. Won't stop. After that, 2 months in New College, and then All Souls. Won't stop. Again, you might think that being the first Jew ever to be made a fellow, this would somehow come up, full stop. He didn't, full stop. Again, I felt all too much at home, particularly my contemporaries, and made lifelong friends of John Sparrow, Douglas Jay, Coran Veris, Ian Bowen, John Austin, and to a certain extent, before our breach about communism, with Christopher Hill. Was violently anti-Zionist. And with whom I argued about this occasionally. I have to report that the important persons among the senior fellows who governed England, Halifax, Geoffrey Dawson, editor of the Times, Salmon, then not yet a lord, Lionel Curtis, the fanatical imperialists, Dougal, D-O-U-G-A-L, Malcolm, who succeeded Cecil Rhodes as the head of the South Africa Company and was civilized, an amiable old rogue. All these people loved being at Old Souls. Loved coming back as to the old school. Talk to junior fellows. Easily. And sometimes quite interestingly. And try to behave as if they were still at school, still junior fellows. Relations when they're old and young were very good. Wilfred Green, the later master of the rolls, who had made more money at the English bar than anyone before him, even Simon, I think was probably a Catholic, Roman Catholic, and a Themite at heart, but none of this ever emerged. I only learned of it in connection with the blackboarding of Hart from a club in London as a Jew, in which apparently he'd played some part. I think you will not find it easy to credit all this, but it is the absolute truth. Then, New York, the war, New York and Washington. My friend Guy Burgess and all that. When I arrived in New York as an official, I discovered that my post had been created for me by John Wheeler Bennett, who is extremely affectionate about me in his autobiography, and Aubrey Morgan, a Welsh patriot, brother-in-law of Lindbergh. Remember, G.H. at the end. They decided that I was suitable for the non-U clients of the United Kingdom. Other people would deal with the WASPs, but I might be suitable for Catholics, Jews, Negroes, Mormons, and other minor tribes without the law. In this connection, they consulted Weizmann and Frankfurter. I had known Frankfurter from his Oxford visits in the 30s. And of course, I became a friend and admirer of Weizmann in the name about 1938. They both testified that I can make it. So I was told later that I'd be suitable. Won't stop. But they certainly had nothing to do with the initiation of the appointment. Nothing whatever. Whatever you may have been told or read. Anyway, to go back. My friends in New York in 1941, such as they were, and there were not many, were my colleagues in the office, all English, of course, no Jews, no foreigners, except me. And one or two American friends I had somehow made. Then the embassy in Washington, 1942. You might easily assume that the Foreign Office, which was violently anti-Zionist with few exceptions. Might form a group into which I didn't naturally fit as a Jew. Thus, they're always accused of anti-Semitism by the Zionists, not altogether without reason. Full stop. Again, I felt totally at ease. Not only John Foster and Tony Rumbold, my friends from earlier days, who were in post there, but the other members of the diplomatic corps. And of course, in the information service which I worked, behaved to me as if I was one of them, and I behaved to them as if in similar fashion. My immediate assistant, Archie McKenzie, a bookmanite, break it, Oxford groups and a break it. Later, a British diplomat was as close to me as anybody. Somehow, the fact that I was a Jew and a Russian, which he, and I dare say everybody, knew perfectly well, never came up, or if it did, in a quite casual and natural fashion. Yes. You know me well enough to know that I'd be unlikely to conceal anything about my origins or my opinions. E.g., my Zionist views were known to some of the diplomatic corps. But they did not seem to mind. Now and then, they would ask me to find out from your Zionist friends, what agitation was going on among them, but nothing beyond it. But Americans, I made the best friends I ever had, very quickly indeed. I met Joe Alsop, first the New Dealers, Benjamin V. Cohen, a prominent New Deal lawyer with high office under Roosevelt, wonderful noble figure, whom I met quite early on in Washington as a friend of John Foster, then Philip William and his wife, Kay, now the famous Mrs. Kay Graham, then the left-wing couple, who are very, very New Deal type, he very left-wing, charming, brilliant, and interesting, whom I immediately made friends, Donnie, D-O-N, Donald, his H-I-W-S, brother of Alger, Edward Pritchard, who worked in the White House, again a lifelong friend, R-A-U-H, a really noble Jewish lawyer, who in turn of all the principal New Dealers. Break it. He was never thought of as a Jew either, oddly enough, and to break it. And then the other end, the wicked Mrs. Longworth, daughter of Theodore Roosevelt, a right-wing hostess, but a grand dame of the First Order, brilliantly amusing and witty. and charming and distinguished. Politically, extremely right wing. And then Joe Alsop, the columnist, who became a really intimate friend till his dying day. I think he was probably the best friend, the most intimate he ever had. With all his quirks, I was very close to him at all times. Then Charles Bolan, the diplomat, with whom and with his wife, Eileen and I became very great friends. Dash, they remained lifelong friends also. And Johnny Walker, the director of the Mellon Gallery, married to a Scottish noblewoman, Dash, daughter of Lord Perth, a Catholic peer, Scottish Catholic peer, who had been Secretary of the League of Nations and ambassador in Rome, Dash. When Johnny was sickly, at one time thought he really was dying of some disease, he told Margaret Dash, his wife, that if he died, she must be sure to marry me, or we would be very happy together. All this boasting, I'm telling you, in order to tell you how surprising it is that I was so cozy and utterly unselfconscious in these societies. The idea of being odd, different, watching them as it were from outside, as Proust watched the French aristocracy. Well, totally not the case. Hold up. Then, back to England. All Souls. No, New College. All Souls. I used to be thought of, before the war, as a very donnish don. More don than anything else. I remember being accused by Lord Hailsham, my colleague at All Souls, in the 30s, of being such a don, such a terrifically typical don. I've never met a don as donish as you. Still, we all love you, etc. After the war, I was not so donish. There were, of course, few fellows of All Souls who didn't like me, possibly because I was a foreigner and a Jew, though they never, never let on. Dash. E.L. Woodward, Humphrey Sumner, the historian, later warden, Brierley, J.L. Brierley, B.R.I.E.R.L.Y., professor of international law. But they thought of me as a talkative, flippity tribute who would never do any serious work in his life and disapproved of me, I think, for that reason, but maybe as a Jew as well, for all I know. All I can tell you, after I was a success in Washington, that attitude totally altered. They all became extremely friendly, very polite. So much for worldly values in academia. It has been so for the rest of my Oxford life. The curious thing about me, Paul, that I knew very few Jews. Then or now? Acquaintances, yes, but friends, no. With all my Zionist passion, I have friends among Israelis. But English Jews, American Jews, only a Frankfurter, Ben Cohen. Up to a very limited point. Keith Joseph. That also. I was the only Jew elected also. I was the only one who was a tutor and fellow of a college since the days of the late Professor Alexander in the 90s. And yet, it somehow wasn't commented on. Oh, no. No. The idea that I somehow felt an outsider ever in my life is simply not so. Hold on. New paragraph. Now about the hunchbacks. The idea came, as you know, from that funny joke about Otto Kahn. Well, that was very pro-British ministers in the American embassy in London who realized it was a bit anti-Semitic as a story, but safe to tell me, dash, indeed, as it was. That and Moses S., who was the first to preach to the American Jews about the pathetic, useless efforts to become assimilated Germans. Perhaps he had much effect on them, as you know. Some German Jews, to the end, felt 150% German. But Hess told them that it was their long noses, their curly hair, which would never make the Germans accept them. And so it has proved. And so it has proved. Full stop. These stories together produced the image of the hump, which perhaps was an over-violent metaphor, but I like these metaphors, like the hedgehog and the fox. It concentrated things. But myself, I never felt in the least bit hump-ridden, not even the tiniest hump. I felt it about certain American Jews. The owners of the New York Times, Walter Lippmann, who terribly didn't want to be Jews, but knew they couldn't avoid it, and others like them. In England, but not very many, not many of prominent people. Hunchbacks are entirely confined to Jews who have what Diana Cooper once succinctly called to me, quote, Jewish trouble, unquote. There's a very clear formula. There's not those who did not suffer from it. The pious fundamentalists, the Zionists, have a terminal or Belisha. Politician of that kind, not at all. But the judge, Lord Cohen, my friend Victor Rothschild, David Price Jones, those to some degree, yes. One is such a so complete a Jew as I am in my own consciousness. One is free from this. And that is true of several Russian Jews I knew. It is not a universal Jewish characteristic. Far from it, but a very widespread one, all the same. Full stop. Again, the hump has nothing to do with being an outsider, which, according to Aline, you somehow connect. Now, about my snobbery and clubs. I expect I am something of a snob. Most people are, and I'm perfectly aware that I'm pleased to be friends with people of distinguished lineage. Not very pleased, but pleased. You say, David Cecil, nobody was at New College with him could have failed to know him quite well. As for me, we became intimate friends. I was his best friend, and he mine, at any rate, in Oxford. And lifelong it was. And his being a lord may have had something to do with what attracted me in his character, but it's not the consciousness of his title, if you see what I mean. So too, Lord Oxford, a gentle, grey, Catholic scholar of Balliol, brought up by priests and women, a friend of various friends of mine in Oxford at that time, among the undergraduates. There's, I was quite a popular don among the, quote, smart set, unquote, I'm afraid. That is, I used to ask to lunch, like Father Darcy, or Ronnie Knox, or Maurice Barra, or Roy Harrod, or Freddie Eyre. Lord Oxford is a minor figure in that world, but he took to me very warmly and told me about Archilochus, A-R-C-H-I-L-O-C-H-U-S. Hence, the hedgehog and the fox. His being a lord really was irrelevant. Not but what the smart set were, of course, partly sons of peers, and I graduated from them to London hostesses during my smart social period, which undoubtedly occurred. But let me go back to clubs for a moment. I never tried to become a member of any club in my life, full stop. When I was before the war, I lived with my parents when in London, and if I wanted to meet people, met them in little Soho restaurants. After the war, and some degree of public position, there were people who wanted to see me who I didn't particularly want to give lunch to or spend more than an hour with. So I needed somewhere. I didn't look round for anything, but suddenly my friend Sylvester Gates, a famous lawyer and banker, asked if I'd like to become a member of the Reform Club. So I said yes, and was elected. And there I had. It was a perfectly nice club, except that whenever I went there, I was invariably, or almost invariably, surrounded by terrible bores who fixed on me. And I found it difficult to get time to write the letter. Some were indeed Jews, some were not. It was there I had a series of political rows with Andy Blunt and Guy Burgess after the war. But no, never mind that. Then I was asked by my friend Raimund, R-A-I-M-U-N-D, von Hoffmannsthal, H-O-F-M-A-N-N-S-V-H-A-L, if I would like to become a member of his club, the St. James's. I said I'd like to become a member of any club where I didn't know people, could go in, have lunch, read a newspaper, write two letters, and go. I was then asked by my friend John Wheeler Bennett whether I'd like to become a member of his club, Brooks's. So I said the same. Then the episode occurred, which you know, in which I received an ambiguous letter from Oliver Littleton, L-Y, in which he said how wonderful it would be if I became member of the St. James's, of which he was chairman, but that he had heard a rumor from the secretary that there was, quote, a prejudice against members of your race, unquote. I won't bore you, as I've told you already, what I replied and what then happened, but I withdrew my name immediately. So I was never formally blackballed, because I never came up for election. But apparently, things were written on the page on which my name originally appeared, which caused two members of the club to resign in indignation. 10 years later, as you know, I was offered honorary fellowship, membership of the club, and accepted, but made it plain that I would never go there in my life. Then they went bankrupt, joined Brooks's and all the Jews in St. James's, now crowd the corridors of Brooks's. That's just a funny outcome. But I never tried to become a member of a club. I said yes, if people suggested it, or no, as the case might be. I've refused at least 4 smart clubs, dining clubs in particular. Perhaps because I thought I'd be terribly bored and we'd have to go to London too much. The Garrick is another story. The last wife, second wife of Lord Rothschild, said to my wife what a pity it was that one could never bring wives, Penny Club, Brother Garrick. And she said, wouldn't it be nice if I joined it? And said so to her. Then she put up two of her friends to do it. I was rung up and asked if I was serious. I said, oh yes, Aline would love it. Became a member by some fast rate machinery. There's other people had to wait years, one is told. And did use it for the purpose of inviting ladies and wives and so on. And I'm very happy in all of them. As for the Athenaeum, when I complained to Lord Robbins about my having no time to myself in the Reform Club, he rapidly made me member of the Athenaeum, and I was duly grateful. But I never, never asked for it. So the idea that I aimed to become a member of clubs is not the case. Believe me, among the list of your peers comes Lord Halifax, who was never a friend. But because we used to chat at All Souls, as all junior fellows did, and then when he was ambassador, he quite enjoyed having me to meals, we did develop quite a friendly relation. Terrible man, as in some ways he was. But a friend? No. The femme fatale, whom I loved, Lady Patricia, was a peer's daughter. You think I might not have fallen in love if she had been commoner? Question mark. A very unlikely hypothesis, besides which she was enormously déclassée. The Christian as a religious missionary in squalor and poverty. I am something of a snob, to some degree, but not in the way I think you think. That is my point. Jewishness did not have that dominant influence on all I was and did and thought and felt. As, according to Aline, you think, or you say, not a burden I ever carried, and not an attribute I ever felt made a difference to my philosophical opinions, to my friendships, to any form of life that I lived. I felt a Jew exactly as I felt I had two legs, two arms, two eyes. Dash. Nothing to be proud or ashamed of. Just an attribute, something one was. Something one couldn't help being. Some people didn't like it, but I was perfectly comfortable with it. Always. Consciously, did it make a difference to anything I was or did? Me. He thought that should be so. Dash. A Jew born in Latvia, then Petersburg, then England, then Washington, etc., etc. And yet, believe me, really fitted in to every society I was ever a member of, almost too comfortably, too frictionlessly. You could say that it indicated a certain failure of personality, of strength of personality, or the like. I did so, full stop. I forgot to add that among the factors which entered the notion the Hunchback was Namier's wonderful phrase used to me about English Jews, as, quote, the order of trembling Israelites, OTI, which Charles Bolin and I, no, Trip Bolin and I in Washington changed into OTAG, capital OTAG, order of trembling amateur Gentiles, dash Walter Lippmann and co. He knew perfectly well what I meant. I was delighted to enjoy myself in talking about him and other Gentiles about it. They may have regarded it as a mild form anti-Semitism, and I dare say it was and is. These, I think, are new paragraph. These, I think, are the only points Aline made. There may be others who may come up when she finishes the book, which she is reading with evident enjoyment. Why, do you feel outside of them as half Canadian, half Russian? I didn't believe it. Same is true of me. The case of Jews is often worse. Oh, reply to this letter. I merely hope to convince you of the truth of what I say, for the benefit of your estimate of me. I honestly don't think that I've exaggerated this or invented it to protect myself against the fearful, dark inner complex, which in fact threatens me day and night. I don't believe that anyone who's ever known me ever doubted that I was a Jew. But, oddly enough, I think half the embassy in Washington and half All Souls did not think it. All this. Now, three postscripts. Number one, Aline thinks that I ought not to have written to you at all about all this, that subjects of biographies have no right to tell their biographers how to interpret their lives. Full stop. But I must say that I do not agree. And I hope that you agree with me, full stop. If not, what can I do but apologize for inflicting disappoint you and ask you to ignore it. Or at worst, ask me a few new questions, which might perhaps induce you to modify some of your ideas about me, full stop. Anyway, I apologize for sending it to you. I do hope it doesn't irritate you. Of course, I don't mean it to do, but one never knows the effect of one's words. Full stop. Forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. Postscript 2. There's one thing about my life which perhaps you haven't stressed sufficiently, if Aline is right. That is the enormous part that music has played in it since, say, the age of 14 or 15. My life has been lived against the background, or indeed as part of the tissue of musical listening. Dash, I play no instrument, but since my school days, I've loved music to a very, very high degree, colon. Listening to Schnabel playing Beethoven, or the Busch Quartet, transformed the limits of my experience, widened them, gave me a new sense of what art is, and above all, of course, what music can be. Full stop. They are not the only influences. I have listened to more soloists, chamber music, opera, symphonies, choral works, than almost, I think, anyone living. Dash, this may sound an extravagant claim. My only point is that it is an intrinsic part of my life, not just one of its great pleasures. If you want to know more about that, do talk to me about this. This wouldn't impinge on the general picture, but might add to it. So next time we meet, bring it up if you want to, or not, as you please. Postscript 3. I suddenly thought this connection that while the BBC keep plying me for various interviews on TV and radio, or which I systematically refuse, comma, a program on what the part that music has played in my life might perhaps be something I could just do. That's without illustrations, of course. I think I could talk about succession of musical experiences. And in this connection, I should like to add, if I haven't already, that while snobbery may indeed be an element in me, hero worship is much more such, colon. I've worshipped, had such heroes as Stravinsky, Toscanini, Edmund Wilson, Weizmann, Pasternak, Akhmatova, not quite but nearly, Brodsky, in whose presence, in whose presence I felt humble and whose every move I followed with dedicated admiration and fascination. Full stop. I really am a hero worshiper. More than I suspect anyone else you've ever known. Full stop. That Lord Halifax, Lord David Cecil, Lord Oxford, and sundry other lords, particularly Labour lords, have not been objects of worship. Dash, whatever made me like some of them was due to quite different motives. Full stop there now. I must stop. Once again, forgive me. This really is the end.